Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091, or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum and peace be unto all of you. It is a wonderful blessing to be back on the air. We are live on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces, and I am speaking to you from Chicago, Illinois. As always, I want to remind you that this is a talk show, and what makes Elevated Places so powerful are the listeners, not only those who participate by taking in information, but those who call in and join our weekly discussions, which are of the highest level. You can call us at 347-324-5091, 347-324-5091, or again, you can log in and listen at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. Please notify all of your followers and friends on Facebook and Twitter that we are on live right now. Tonight is going to be a very exciting program. There was a historic event that took place at Tuskegee University last week, and we're going to talk about that overwhelming event. Remember to visit avaspeaks.com, where you can get recent lectures such as the response to the charges against Minister Louis Farrakhan concerning the murder of Malcolm X that was portrayed in the recent Lifetime television movie Betty and Coretta. You can also obtain vintage lectures such as The Deportation of Moon and Light, Color, and the Mothership, all available to you on CD and DVD, and you can also obtain my latest book titles. That's at avaspeaks.com. Now, I am blessed, as always, to have the brilliant Elevated Places team making this show possible. And one of our wonderful, brilliant minds that make this show move is my brother, Terrence, and yours, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Brother Terrence was at Tuskegee last week, as was Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, our Elevated Places contributor and analyst, who will join us later. Right now, Brother Terrence, assalamu alaikum. It's good to be with you again on Elevated Places.
Well, alaikum salam, and it is very good to be here as well.
Yes, sir. And you are where tonight? We always have to ask.
Well, last week I was at that great historically black college and university, HBCU, called Tuskegee. But tonight I'm back home at North Carolina and State University for a minute because
yes,
it's probates. Probates are going on this week. You know, that's the coming out of the Greek organizations, that great black experience. But not enough about just college, but we want to quickly get into that wonderful institution called Tuskegee down in Tuskegee, Alabama.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we're going to be joined in a few minutes by some incredible people that helped to make that event take place. So tell us a little bit about Tuskegee, Brother Terrence, and then we're going to open up the microphone to our guests so they can join this discussion.
Well, you know, one thing I will say, you know, I will say that that man, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is beyond extraordinary. And our guests will talk more, you know, because he arrived on that Wednesday and he was nonstop on that campus and doing the things that he does, and that is learning as well as teaching. So while I was at Tuskegee, you know, he spoke to the students, he spoke to high school, he spoke to the community. And interesting, you know, as I said, I'm at North Carolina A&T State University, but there was a friend, a graduate of A&T, that works for the Tuskegee Airmen Historical Site. And he works there as a ranger, and he was afforded the opportunity on last Saturday to give the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan a tour of that site. So, you know, it was just a beautiful thing, and one of the things that he told me is that the minister really absorbed it and took it in and really enjoyed it. But one of the other things that amazed me as I was on the campus, the level of defense for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when the students spoke out in defense of the minister and even put out a YouTube video, Farrakhan, the Awakening, and the chapter of the NAACP was in full support of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and some young students at Tuskegee came and asked me about the unity of Christianity and Islam, and I explained that to her. So the minister opened up a lot of eyes that last week with a lot of the believers, and he didn't stop just in Tuskegee. He went on to Birmingham, Alabama, and spoke at a church, and I also heard he made a stop in Atlanta, Georgia, and as we know, he's going to be with our brother Boyce Watkins this Saturday on the south side of Chicago at a church on a talk with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So he's a man that's non-stop, and he's continuing to go along with his weekly The Time and What Must Be Done shows every Saturday at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern at NOI.org, The Time. NOI.org/The Time.
Yes, sir. And, you know, the history that Tuskegee is steeped in made the minister's presence there so timely, and of course it was revealed to all of us. Most of us were not aware that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had expressed a deep interest in black people acquiring ownership of Tuskegee, and all of our historically black colleges and universities, but he had a particular interest in that institution, and I find that very powerful that would be revealed just at the time when Minister Farrakhan has implemented the economic blueprint and is urging all of our people from every walk of life to begin to set aside their nickels and dimes. And I say that to the listeners. No matter what our financial condition is, we can always identify some money that we're throwing away. And so begin now, beloved, and teach your children to, you know, whether it's a jar or wherever you want to do it, but begin to save a few coins or a couple of dollars, whatever you can do on a daily basis, that you can be prepared when the time comes, and it will be soon, that you'll be called to invest in yourself. We can see that America's condition is such that she is not able to take care of her own, and therefore she is not only unable but unwilling to do anything about the condition of her former slaves. It is time for us to do for self. And tonight, thanks to you, Brother Terrence, arranging for this, we have two very powerful people joining us on the line. One is our Brother Scott Muhammad. Now, Brother Scott is a co-director of Students for Education and Economic Development Incorporated. That's SEED, the acronym is SEED Incorporated. His wife, Sister Erica, is co-director, and the two enjoy five children. They're a power couple. And Brother Scott is a 21-year follower of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the guidance and leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he and his wife are also founders of the Jubilee Film Festival, which is now in its sixth year. Welcome to Elevated Places, Brother Scott.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to have you. Before we go further in the discussion, you are joined by a young sister that I was blessed to hear during the program, but also watched her, thanks to Brother Terrence, on YouTube. And this sister is amazing, Sister Brooke Moore White. She is a senior at Tuskegee University, and she is majoring in sociology, and she's minoring in bioethics. She's originally from Los Angeles, California, and Brooke has been very active since moving to Tuskegee, including being the co-chair of the Black Belt Deliberation Dialogue Group, the Black Belt Deliberative Dialogue Group, BBDDG. Very powerful. She is a member of the Tuskegee Clean City Committee, and she was a candidate in the city municipal election for the District 1 seat back in August of 2012. Sister Brooke, and she proved that, is a believer in truth, love, and light, and she believes strongly and demonstrates it that Tuskegee can be helped, healed, and transformed with a cooperative and collaborative community effort. Sister Brooke, welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, thank you.
Oh,
it's a pleasure.
You're more than,
appreciate it.
Oh, listen, more than welcome, and to both of you, congratulations on last week. Absolutely fantastic. So Brother Terrence is with us. He was present. And also our Elevated Places analyst and contributor, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, who was also in Tuskegee. I just want to acknowledge and bring him into the circle. Dr. Ridgely, assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to Elevated Places.
Well, alaikum salam to everybody.
All right. So let's talk about it. And I first want to make sure that the listeners know they can go to NOI.org and watch the webcast of Minister Farrakhan at Tuskegee. I know we say that. I mean, sometimes it becomes almost cliche when we say, oh, the minister got down, he threw down, he was powerful. But, you know, is it cliche to say the sun is powerful and it shines brightly and it gives life to the planet? It's just real. And I must say that he put some wisdom in front of black people last Friday that was phenomenal. And we're going to get into that tonight. But I want to hear from the group, all four of you, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, Sister Brooke, Brother Scott. And Brother Terrence, I'm going to ask you to help me moderate the discussion, especially since you were present, as to the critical things that went down and what the experience was like leading up to the minister's coming there and then the experience itself, and, of course, how things are going in the aftermath of his visit.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to add, Sister Ava, is the extraordinary work and dedication of Brother Scott and Sister Brooke. You know, when you come on to someone else's college campus or you come into that city or in that area, you don't really know who's doing what or who's who, but one of the indicators that makes me know that somebody is doing something is their work. And all I know is that Brother Scott, his name was a name that was called, check with Brother Scott, check with Brother Scott. He would know, he would know. So we and when I knew that his name was being called, I knew the weight that he carried, and he carried it real well, making sure all of the things were done. And our sister Brooke, not only did she speak, but she also was helping to coordinate the volunteers that was assisting the brothers and sisters in the nation to make sure that everything ran smoothly and efficiently. So we, you know, we thank them for that work, because as you said, we know it's not an easy undertaking to bring the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan anywhere, especially to the college campus. So as you said, I would really want to have both of them speak. Of course, Brother Scott, what was it like to invite the minister, as we heard Student Minister Mikkel mention about you sending the invitation to him, and for Sister Brooke, talk about, you know, the students coming together to do the YouTube videos, which the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan loved when they presented it to him Thursday night in the chapel. You know, what was the spirit of the students when they came out in support of Minister Farrakhan?
All right.
Brother Scott, bro.
Yes, sir. Well, I started praying through my letter to the minister back in November. And, you know, it's like I saw what I wanted him to do. In my film festival, I showed the World Friendship Tour several times. And, you know, I generally open up by saying before Osama or Obama, there was Farrakhan. You know, and if you can't talk intelligently about the state of world affairs or Barack Obama or any of that, if you do not know about the World Friendship Tour because of what the image of the black male was around the world, and this man changed that. And when he went through those 53 nations and was accepted as head of state, then that showed the world, no, we lead us here. It manifested because everybody's always following the black male in America anyway, but this manifested. So it was very important to me. You know, I invited him to do the keynote address, but also it was more important to me that he do the World Friendship Tour, even in the keynote address, if I had a choice. You know, I wanted him to come, and I wanted to show the World Friendship Tour with him in the audience so that he could experience what I experienced when people watched this. And it's more layered than what I'm saying. I know that we're on the time limit here, so, you know, but that was it. So I started praying through that back in November and working through the process. And also, I wanted him to come down so that he could see the culmination of the work that my wife and I have been doing really since 2002 in Chicago, which we have, we call Farm School out of our seed program. We had managed to develop the program to also include an apprenticeship program for adults. And so it had reached the stage that it needed to reach where I was comfortable sharing this with him. And my roots were deep enough where I was comfortable exposing this program to the world, which I knew was what would happen once the minister came. So, you know, without taking too much more time, let me just say that it was the process was deep, you know, all the way around. When I first sent it to the minister, you know, I was having weird computer problems. And, you know, I sent the schedule in to him, and he, you know, sent me a notice back saying, well, brother, remember that I'm 80 now. And I said, well, yes, sir. And so I had a dump site for the events that we wanted to do, and then I had a lighter site for the real schedule. So I thought I was sending them the real schedule and the dump site schedule with everything, and crazy times went to him. And then I got a phone call, and he made me walk him through every single activity. And there were 13 separate events that we had. And each of these 13 separate events had 13 separate administrations with all of the pursuant personalities that go with those administrations. You know, and that's just on that end, and that doesn't necessarily include the different organizations that were involved, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it was a, I knew coming up that it was going to be heavy, but I just wanted it to be where the heaviness did not weigh on him, where he was able to flow through his events, see what we needed for him to see, and, you know, do what we needed him to do. And let me just, one more thing, the minister did everything we requested of him. You know, when you deal with the characteristic of humility and service, you know, this man did everything that we requested, and people were saying, "Oh, he ain't gonna do that." Even security, "Oh, he's not gonna do this. He's not gonna do that." But it's like I saw something, and I knew he saw something, so I didn't take anybody else's estimation of what the minister would or would not do. And it's important for, I think, believers to do that when they're dealing with their minister and their intimate connection with him. You know, I asked him to do things, and he did it. And everybody is going to be benefiting, not only last week, but we're going to benefit way into the future based on what he saw, you know, in honoring the request. And I'll leave it there.
Sir, beautiful.
So, Sister Brooke, can you go into your experience with the minister, not just with the minister, but also the students' reaction, because y'all hit YouTube fast before the minister or while the minister was there in his defense. But what were the reactions of the students when the minister was coming, while he was there, and as Sister Ava said, the aftermath of him being there?
Okay. Well, I'll just start it off by saying, you know, the whole planning of Minister Farrakhan's visit to the campus, it was going a little too smooth to really be believable. And so everything was really running smoothly until about a week before he was supposed to arrive. And then one of the university's board of trustees decided to speak out against his visit and compared Minister Farrakhan coming to us supporting the KKK, which is definitely a gross, I can't even think of the word. It's just a ill-informed and ill-decided, ill decision to make a statement like that for a black college. And then we found out that the board of trustees happened to be Caucasian. And, you know, as an HBCU, we can't stand, or as a university period, we can never stand by and watch someone trounce on our First Amendment rights. So as a response to the board of trustees speaking out, we decided to, one, craft a letter of open support to our president, which was delivered to the president and the board of trustees on their last board meeting in March. And then we also decided to create a YouTube video so that we could educate and inform the university students on who Minister Farrakhan is, because, you know, there are a lot of students who know him. There are a whole lot more who probably do not know his true life's work. So, I mean, for probably about 3 days straight, we had 2 to 3 of our black belt members working diligently on preparing this video. And the theme of it, the song behind it is Misunderstood. Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood by Nina Simone. And that song was chosen specifically because clearly if people listen to Minister Farrakhan, what he's saying, they'll be able to erase all those misconceptions, all those confusions, all those misunderstandings about him. So we had that song playing, as well as about 5 or 6 excerpts of the speeches that he's given around the world. Once we got that together, I mean, that really showed us how students can rally together and rally behind each other, because we had never had a situation like that in my 5 years at this university. And just seeing us kind of pull together let us know that we can really conquer anything that comes up in front of us. And as for the response to Minister Farrakhan's coming, I mean, I think a lot of the students, because the university that we go to is slightly conservative, they didn't really believe that he was going to be coming to the institution. So once he finally, it was cemented in stone that he was coming, everyone was, I mean, genuinely excited about his visit. And I mean, through his visit, everyone's been excited. And post his visit, all I've heard about is the excitement. I mean, even students who didn't necessarily agree with his message were appreciative to have the opportunity to listen and judge for themselves on his words, not what a board of trustees had placed in their head beforehand.
Well, you know, I was so impressed with it because we are finally arriving through you, the young people. And if we study revolution in this last 6,000-year cycle of human history, revolutions are always led by the intellectual class, and they virtually always are driven through institutions of higher education. And the analytical ability of you and the other students is just phenomenal. And that to me touches on the core of what our problem has been for generations, with that slave mentality of the willingness to let the children of our slave masters just summarily define our own brothers and sisters for us. And then say to us, don't listen, we're not talking about joining something. We're not talking about converting to a religion. We're talking about being able to hear someone present their position. And a true intellectual is able to open their mind to hear from any and everybody. And you can't even qualify as an institution of higher learning if you limit the students.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons the minister is doing this, because he knows this is where our hope is. It is in our students. So that was just beautiful. It's absolutely
indeed.
Yes, I'd like to add something.
Yes,
here.
Sir.
That video that the students put together, I would say in terms of four-minute sound bites, that's the best set of four-minute sound bites of the minister I have seen yet. They
Come
did
on.
A phenomenal job. They need to get some type of award. It needs to be shown. This is why we got to have our own media.
Yes.
That's got this type of talent amongst us that can get our point across if we have the media and avenue to spread it, because they did a wonderful job.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. You know, I would like to add, just for the listening audience, as we have heard the reception of the minister, the planning of the minister, the minister saw a lot of things. He spent time with the mayor. Like I say, he saw the Tuskegee Airmen site. I would like to know from Sister Brooke, can you talk a little bit more, because one of the things about the Black Belt Deliberative Dialogue Group, because one of the things that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is doing, he's going around the country and starting to be allowed, or students are inviting him back to black colleges where he has been, there has been an actual ban or, you know, a deliberate effort to keep him off the black college campuses. And as we're going across the country, and our brother Jaleel Muhammad, who's heading up this Office of Student Affairs, we're reconnecting with those student activists on the college campuses. And so I would want to know, what is the mission or the goal of the Black Belt Deliberative Dialogue Group as it relates to activism in the students at Tuskegee?
Okay. Well, I want to say first is that one of our members, her name is Lindsay Lunsford, she kind of coined the term, instead of it being student activists, we're scholar activists, because we study history and then we act upon it. We don't just, you know, have a reactionary, an impulsive reaction to what's going on. We definitely take history into context and use it to help us. So the Black Deliberative Dialogue Group is a campus community partnership that is really created to be able to advance black community through dialogue, because a lot of times you have African-American, certain topics and subjects that African-Americans are kind of afraid to have. And we want to create a safe space for that discussion to be had. So once the discussion is complete, we can go out and get items and then go implement them in our community. And I know that last year our focus was mainly on the syphilis study that was conducted here for 40 years, from 1932 to 1972, and we went around discussing different themes as it relates to the syphilis study, including the black professional involvement, how it affected families, how women were affected, things like that. And this year, our focus kind of shifted from the past to the future. Our theme this year is youth and peace building. And how, I mean, Minister Farrakhan says it relates, how everything relates is that, I mean, the youth are our future. So we want to make sure that we're in the communities, that we're in the schools, that we're doing positive, productive things, and that we're also being positive and productive role models in the community. And I don't know about many other HBCU towns, but in Tuskegee, you have a serious town and gown divide where the people on the campus stay on the campus and the people in the community stay in the community. So we're trying to be that liaison, that bridge between, that kind of lessens the problems that there are in Tuskegee.
Let me add something to that, Sister Brooke. It's not just at Tuskegee that they have a fence around Tuskegee keeping the students away from the community. At almost every historically black college that I have seen personally or even view using Google maps, they have a fence dividing. I don't know whether to keep the students in or to keep the community out. Some places the barbed wire is pointed out. Some places it's pointed in. Sometimes it's just some sharp stuff up the top. But it's definitely intended to keep the town's intent away from the community, and not just at Tuskegee, but all over. And this brings me to a question I want to ask Scott, and then I want to come back and ask Brooke a question about the bioethics, but with Brother Scott. You know, both of us are in agriculture, and Brother Scott, I know what's been going on in my old college of North Carolina A&T. They don't even have an agricultural economics department anymore. So I was wondering at Tuskegee, the minister asked how many people were in agriculture, and I only saw two hands. What are they doing? I know you got your program dealing with the young people, but what can you tell young people in terms of what's available at Tuskegee if you want to be a farmer? Or is it just to train you to go to work for the government?
Right. I think he asked who wanted to be farmers. Because you got people in agriculture here, but to actually be farmers is an idea that hasn't yet re-caught on. In terms of what's going on here, man, this university is profound. You know, you have engineering department here with chemical engineering, mechanical, electrical. I've met students who are in environmental engineering. You have a nursing department. You have Tuskegee, I think, graduates 75% of the black veterinarians for the whole country, animal husbandry. You have the only HBCU that has an aeronautics department, you know, when I'm not teaching being astronomy. I mean, this is really our home, you know, and that was a point if I would have had more energy that I really wanted to make when the president was coming to speak, when I was introducing them. You know, Booker T. Washington was the leader of black America in his day.
That's
you know,
right.
Dr. Garvey, Mr. Marcus Garvey wanted to come here to meet him, you know, and
yeah.
One of the things that propelled Booker T. Washington into the spotlight, let me say it like that, because his work propelled him into the leadership position. Make no mistake about that. At the time when he was coming and he's dealing with education for real, and his message is, look, we got to make ourselves useful, you know, to ourselves. But in 1897, I believe it was, there was a meeting, a big, like, constitutional convention or something in Atlanta. And you had the northern whites there, you had the southern whites there, and there was still a lot of animus and enmity between them. And then you had the black people there who had, we were still trying to assert, you know, our identity and assert ourselves as actual people. And they asked this man to come and speak, and a lot of people felt they were putting him in a trick bag, you know, to come and speak, because if you spoke in a way that ticked off the southern whites, it would increase the lynching. If you spoke in a way that ticked off the northern whites, they'd cut your funding. And then you had your own people here, and the hidden hand was already moving Du Bois and others against him, and saying, look, he's Uncle Tom. So he was in the heck of a situation. But there was a line in the speech, man, that this brother said, listen, in all things social, we can be as separate as fingers on a hand. But where it concerns the general welfare of all of us, then we be that hand, that unified hand. And it just, it blew everybody away. And that cemented his place as the premier figure in Black America. You know, and then here we are again at a precious moment in time. And here's the president who, man, this man was getting letters from the ADL. He was getting, you know, he was getting attacked by his own board members. You only saw Hornsby out front, but you didn't see the four Jewish guys on that same board that were pushing him. You know, you heard from the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's who Brooke and the Black Belt Deliberative Dialogue and the Young Black Artist Movement, that's who they were responding to. But this man, you know, he's embattled. They're threatening to cut off his 500-bedroom dorm that he wants to build. They're threatening. And look, these people have control like this where if this man wants to bring his brother to his campus for his students to grow from, then these people are saying, well, we'll block the funding for your hospital, playing games with our institution. You know, so it was a huge moment. You know, and I really wanted to context that before the brother got up to speak. But when he did get up to speak, he spoke of the marriage between the philosophy of Booker T. Washington and the philosophy of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So this is our home. That's my point, you know. And now that we're here, we got a clean house. Because this, I intend for this to be our Black university. I don't care who don't like it. You know, it's going to reflect this town, and we're going to cut a damn fence down, too.
Well, that's exactly why the minister came, and that is why he's engaged in the time and what must be done, because you're exactly right. And see, listening to you, Brother Scott, delineate some of the nation-building components that are offered at Tuskegee that you really don't find anywhere else. I mean, it's like a microcosm of a nation. And when the minister said, you know, Friday, he called Tuskegee the seminal fluid of the kingdom of God. And I mean, I was watching it on my iPad. I just gasped when he said that. You know, because the profound nature of that, I just, you know, hope that we can, all of us can wrap our minds around the magnitude of that statement.
Sister, if the whole system was to collapse, you got everything you need to jumpstart civilization at that university.
Yes.
And you think of what is the purpose of the seminal fluid. And that's what, wrap your mind around that.
Well, that's the point.
Doing it.
Yeah, that's the life fluid. That's the point. You know,
carries the seed.
It's the sperm. It's the seed of the kingdom of God. He's never said that about any place else.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Ever.
No, he's never said it about any place else. He did a parrot for me. It was a paradigm shift in my understanding as a Muslim and a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in terms of what my mission is and job should be. You know, in the past, some of us had the type of mentality that we were waiting on Master Faraz Muhammad to bring down the New Jerusalem from the mother plane, and we would just sit here and just wait. But Master Farrakhan made it very clear that we're not to wait. We are to work as well as wait, and therefore we are to build God's kingdom on earth with what we have. And if we make mistakes, we fix it and we move forward. So he's giving everybody now marching orders, not just complaining about the situation and the circumstances, but now let us organize, let us think, let us work together, let us put our resources together. Yes, we want to control Tuskegee, but to control Tuskegee is going to take some money, because the reason the white boys and Jews is on the board is because the board and the president of the university's main job is to secure funds. And right now, funds come from rich white folk, the government, and the military. And unfortunately, the rich white folk, the government, and the military do not have our interest at heart, and it's proven by what Sister Brooks researched in terms of the syphilis study they did at Tuskegee, and along with that, the even housing the Henrietta Lacks immortal cells there at Tuskegee. And so the question is, as long as we allow white people to fund our education and to fund the research on our campuses, what can we expect except more syphilis type of experiments on us and us to be led in directions not in benefit to ourselves?
May I say something on that? So the Freedom Rides were called off by CORE, and I think James Farmer. He called them off because they said that they were too dangerous. And I had an opportunity to talk to Reverend Bevel about that one day, and he was saying, well, in movements, you have to be able to hear the first lie. He said the first lie was that it was too dangerous. He said that was a lie. He said it was dangerous, but it wasn't too dangerous. He said when he stood up, and he was about 19, to call the Freedom Rides back on, there were people, elders in the room, that were saying, well, we can't go on this trip because we ain't got enough money and we need some attorneys. And Reverend Bevel said, well, no, we don't need money and attorneys. We need courage and integrity. And that's what it's going to take to get Tuskegee. You know, the minister has a name that is better than gold. We already got the money. We need courage and integrity. And that's the challenge that we're making today. See, others got the money right now to fund Tuskegee, but they fund strippers. Strippers riding around in Lexuses, and their children dumb as a box of rocks. See, there has to be a shift, not only in the paradigm of education, in the attitude of us, who would rather spend our money on weed, beer, and hoes than to educate our children. Now, when you get that kind of a man that makes the determination that, no, the education of our children is paramount, you will find that there's plenty of money. Just go to work, man. The money will come.
Yes, sir.
So,
go ahead.
Sister Ava, I did. I don't know if we are at a break time.
No, we lost you for a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, one of the things I was going to say, and I want to go back to a point that Brooke said, I was with a sister, Marimba Ani, who wrote the book, Urugu, and one of the things she talked about, this concept of our African worldview of death and birth, and that is nothing linear like this Eurocentric thing, but everything is circular and things go in cycle. One of the things that Brooke talked about, and Dr. Richard Glenn affirmed to this, is that when the club that I was a part of, the history club, the Afrocentric club on A&T's campus, one of the things that he was mentioning is that there was, well, let me go back. In the 60s and 70s, the university and the campus was one. There was no physical barrier, and there was no imaginary barrier. A&T was part of the city of Greensboro and the black community. They was one. There has been a concerted effort to separate the campus from the city. So you have students coming in, whether they live in the city or from out of state, coming on a campus that's in a city, but they don't feel that they're part of the city, and there's a disconnect between the city and the community. Also, the club that I was a part of at that time, we didn't just study Afrocentric history and read the books and get intellectually stimulated, but we translated, we studied, and then we articulated in scholarship, meaning that those students that were Afrocentric also was making the Dean's List, the National Honor Society, and taking that scholarship to combat the ideologies that was dismantling things in our communities, whether it be the Brothers on the Block or the educational system for our children and working with the mentoring process. But then in the mid-90s or late 90s, that consciousness was killed out, as we see the banning of Minister Farrakhan. So we're seeing the rebirth and resurgence. So I never met Brooke before Tuskegee, and she probably never met Dr. Ridgely, but that concept of students taking that scholarship that they're getting on that campus and utilizing it into the community, where the community may not have access to that knowledge, that research, and the things that they are blessed, and the things that they're blessed to hear from Minister Farrakhan. Now they can translate that into plans and actions that can actually help the community, where the students can now go back into farming and that food can be utilized for the community, and having a connection where the community don't feel like y'all some uppity folks and y'all don't have a part of our community, as seen in School Days. Samuel Jackson in that movie said, "We were born here, we live here, and we gonna die here." And that scenario is playing out. So I applaud Sister Brooke and the group for doing what they're doing by using their scholarship, which is very key, and the minister always wants us to be scholars, and that's why the book Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews is a scholarly book and not just some throw-off book. It's a scholarly book in defense of the situation that we've gone through here in America.
Yeah, the generational flow, the continuity is deliberately, as Dr. Ridgely is saying, all of you are alluding to, it's deliberately broken by that isolation. You know, and it's the complete opposite with the predominantly white campuses. I was born and grew up in Columbus, Ohio, where Ohio State University is either the largest or one of the largest universities in the country, well over 50,000 students. And so it's a small city in and of itself, and it at its root is agriculturally based. And that's another thing that the general public doesn't understand about colleges and universities. They are the think tanks of any society. You know, that's where all of the ideas come from. You know, that's why Harvard University is so carefully protected, because the thinkers are shaped and molded, and plans and schemes for black people are often tried and tested on these campuses, like University of Wisconsin in Madison. A lot of experimentation takes place. I live right now in Hyde Park in Chicago, as does Minister Farrakhan, and also President Obama's home is here. The University of Chicago is where they developed the atom bomb. You know, and
right.
So there's no such thing as any nation or society or civilization evolving if it doesn't have its own incubator, its own think tank, where its offspring are being taught, trained, and think in the best interest of that society. And we know that black college students, by and large, it's just the opposite. They are isolated, and then, you know, white corporate America comes in and plucks off the best minds. You know, when you listen to Condoleezza Rice talk about her history and upbringing, and she was right there. That was one of her friends, was one of the four girls who were blown to bits in Birmingham,
right,
Alabama, during the Civil Rights Movement, and yet you would think that would have affected and shaped her mind about what she would do in life. But this woman is so brilliant. She's such a genius. They were tracking her from middle school. And they come, and they pluck you. And so what you all are saying, you know, the listeners really have to know, it's not something we can take lightly. This is a very wicked, dangerous design that has to be penetrated. And that's why there is such overwhelming, vehement resistance, not only to the minister, but to any of us who represent him, coming on these college campuses. And ever since the Million Man March, there has been an unspoken sanction against us. And the sad thing is, you know, as Brother Scott's talking about, the Jews on the board that are behind this man. But, you know, what's really embarrassing and absurd is how small the amount of money is we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
All right.
You know, it's not like we're talking about $200 million. You know, these people shut down these college presidents over a few hundred grand. Sometimes $50,000 and $60,000 is enough to shut somebody down when, you know, these as you talk about these entertainers, they're riding around in automobiles that cost $200,000-$400,000. So it is a mindset. You know, it's absolutely a mindset.
Indeed. But let me insert this. You actually are talking about $250 million down here at Tuskegee. That's what their capital campaign is. And that was part of the concern with bringing the minister down at this particular time, that he might isolate some of the donors. The money that they're talking about in terms of building, they were talking about blocking a new veterinarian hospital to keep the accreditation. Ooh, and that with the 500-bedroom dorm, we're talking upwards of $50 million. So that's what's on the table in these regards. So, you know, the battle is in the sky, and it's real, and it's on. And so now we have to get up and, you know, the seminal fluid. You know, this man had to pollinate the idea of the children because they were dormant, you know. This man had to come and pollinate these ideas, you know. So in other words, there's a birth about to happen, what is going on down here in Tuskegee, you know, and, you know, my prayer is that we put on our action clothes, you know. Dr. Risley knows something about putting them overalls on and them big boots with your steel toes and getting out in the field and doing this for real. You know, one of the things about, you know, our program that is probably a little bit different even than all of the universities that you are familiar with is we have children farming and making money and setting up their own market and being credited with reversing the food desert. You know, we got that. You know, and that was one of the presentations that we made to Brother Farrakhan, and you'll be hearing more about it, you know, because we took children with nothing and taught them how to research, develop, produce, and market agriculture products. And that idea was not, you know, generated off of a college campus. You know, this comes out of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, so we're looking forward to being able to show and prove something that I guess, you know, needs to be shown and proved today. And we're ready to take on all comers and all challenges. And that is my challenge.
Well, you know, the minister will say, you'll hear him in the next installment of The Time and What Must Be Done, talk about the fact and remind us that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said preaching alone would not be enough for black people, that it would require chastisement. And this is what we're experiencing now. Because of the refusal to do as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, and that is accept the best and only solution to our problem, which is separation.
That's right.
We have continued to pursue integration, and it's all illusion. You know, these people print money. You know, dollars have no intrinsic value, and you're going to see through what China does in the near future just how insignificant the U.S. dollar is. The value of it is falling every single day. But we're going to see it. We're going to see it hit rock bottom, where you can have a wheelbarrow full of $100 bills, and you wouldn't be able to get a carton of milk with it. You know. But the minister said we are in for a chastisement, which is going to drive us to do for self. And so it's very key that he is going around, actually physically and literally identifying the sources of our new life, of which Tuskegee is one. And I do want to mention, we've got callers lining up, you know, that even though they go under the name Tuskegee Airmen, originally, and in fact one of my high school classmates' father was a Tuskegee Airman who just passed away recently, Sterling Gill Sr. They were originally in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm.
That's where the Tuskegee, what became the Tuskegee Airmen, originated. And the mindset of black people in Tulsa that led to the development of what was called Black Wall Street. You had black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that had assets over $500,000.
That's right.
Which was serious money, at that time. But when these enemies leveled that area, the first air bombing that ever occurred in history, you know, was on black people, on American soil.
That's right.
You know, and those brothers came to Tuskegee, Alabama, to continue their work. You know, and a lot of those brothers that became faculty and taught the brothers that flew in World War II, those brothers flew in World War I. You know, and so the... You know, it's not as though we don't have a history of attempting to do this, but we couldn't get it done without God's protection and God's help.
That's right.
That's
right. And this is why we need to open up our minds and accept the reality that God has come and that God has raised up a physical man who in turn taught a man who's in our midst right now. I mean, but we'll reach that point, as they say in the church, soon and very soon. You know, but I just had to insert that. But
praise,
you know, this
Lord,
is so powerful. It's, you know, this oh my God, this is so powerful.
Well, you know, as you saw those brothers who had this idea of flying, how they were run out of one place and moved to another. That life keeps going, and then our enemy keeps following us around, trying to put out that light. And every time they think they put that light out, somebody comes with a match. So Mr. Farrakhan is coming with a big match now. We will light up all over the country, all the 37 black colleges and universities, and push the enemy out with the light of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Absolutely. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a very short 1-minute infomercial break. And when we come back from that, we're going to go to the phones. We've got callers lining up that want to talk to the panel. So we'll take that quick 1-minute infomercial. We'll be right back.
That God, through the prophet, tell the people again and again, and we've been told today, most of us are not going to see that God has really come until this country has been brought low. And though the white man has lost his power, then most of us will see. The lucky ones will see spiritually prior to that, and those are the ones who shall be hidden in the days of God's wrath, which will break out not long after Minister Farrakhan departs. And that's very soon.
For more information, or to order authorized lectures and seminars by Brother Jibril Muhammad, call 719-581-2136. That number again is 719-581-2136. Or email bjmhmd2000@earthlink.net.
Welcome back to Elevated Places. We are on the phone tonight live from Chicago, Illinois. And you can log in at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. You can call in at 347-324-5091. And we are joined by my co-host, Terrence Muhammad, our analyst and contributor, Dr. Rizzi Muhammad, and our very special guests from Tuskegee University, Scott Muhammad and Brooke Moore White. We're about to go to the phones. We have some callers who want to talk to the panel. We're going to start with Sister Gloria, and let me get her mic open. Sister Gloria, welcome to Elevated Places.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My question is in reference to the YouTube video. Was that strictly for the students there, or is that available to students in general?
That video is available to anyone. We just posted it online. You know, original target was the Tuskegee University students, but it is definitely available for use for anyone. If you want the title of it, I can give it to you. It is,
yes, ma'am.
It is Farrakhan Awakens Tuskegee University.
All right. And thank you so much.
Thank you, beloved. Thank you for the question. Because I agree with Dr. Ridgely, we've got to put that message out there, and perhaps as the minister proceeds to these campuses, we need to lead in with that video. And just get
right.
it out the way. Just get it out the way.
That's right.
And,
you know, just take the offensive. Because we know, I mean, they come with the same old tired propaganda every time.
That's right. That's right.
And I'll ask Sister Ava that once she goes to that YouTube site, you know, keep logging in Tuskegee Farrakhan, because there's a YouTube video with three of the sisters in the Deliberate Dialogue talking about the minister's visit.
Yes, There's another
individual sister talking about the defense and the minister. Then there's the NAACP having a meeting where they show their board members reading a resolution and actually unanimously supporting Minister Farrakhan. And there's also a YouTube video up where the minister is greeting at a dinner with the president of the college. So there's a couple of YouTube videos that are out, but I do just love the ones where the students are supporting, even saying, what are you afraid of? I mean, what are you afraid of us to learn? Why would you want him to stop coming to talk to us about economics and self-determination? What is it? I mean, they were strong in the defense.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. We're going to go to the phones again. We have Dr. Salam on the line. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Salam. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, dear sister. Assalamu alaikum to you and Brother Terrence, a small plain man, and Dr. Ridgely and your guest. We got to get on that subject another time. But these young brothers, it is so refreshing to hear young college students who are in tune to the time and what must be done.
Yeah.
Because that is leadership. And when the minister leaves the campuses, which most people don't want him to show up on, is their duty and their will to continue that message and stand up for the righteousness that they heard and that they believe in. So really, once he anoints a campus, there's some responsibility within the believers and those who say they're conscious on that campus. So, and this is one of the things that I wanted just to share. The messenger told Minister Farrakhan, on this man I lay the key. Now, Dr. Ava and guest, it's a difference in giving somebody something and laying something on somebody. You know, if... you can hand over a gift. If the gift is real, you know, is preciously wrapped, that doesn't mean it's got to be received properly. And you can always return it. It's a possession that you can control. But the messenger said, lay the key. That means he placed an anointing on this man. But this anointing, Dr. Ava, was also a burden. And when I say burden, I don't mean that derogatorily. But a burden is an enduring weight rooted in duty. He can't stop being dutiful because on him, there's the key. So he has to do what he does, and at a time when we thought he was so ill that he might be removed from our midst, Allah just reached up and said, you see what I can do? And he brought this man back.
Yes, he did.
Healthy, better looking than he was before he got sick.
That's right.
And he's moving faster. He's still wearing security out. I mean, when the minister says, I'm going to wrap this up, you know that's another hour. So you got to stand a little longer. But at a certain point, the messenger said, at a certain point, dear brother, you will get all of our people. Now, all black people are not necessarily our people, but for those who have ears, let them hear, and for those who have eyes, let them see. And I'm just so thankful I see our youth coming the way they are. And Dr. Ava, I just love you for your continuous strength and the numbers of people that are listening. There's no other place on this planet that you can go to an elevated place except for through Dr. Ava Muhammad and her team.
Bless your heart.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. That was an awesome definition. I hope everybody heard that of burden. Inverted weight rooted in duty.
Yes. And I like to say this about Brother Scott and Sister Brooke. You know, these two people are not spectators. And
not
unfortunately, most of us are spectators. And so those non-spectators, got to realize you're probably not going to get too much help from the spectators. They'll be watching y'all for a while, but just keep rolling. Eventually, they'll decide to get in the game.
Yes, well, they won't have any choice but to get in it very soon. I want to make a brief announcement that I'm delighted to make. And then we will continue our discussion. Two things. Number one, the March 14th episode of Elevated Places had a total to date of more than 200,000 listens.
What?
Yes, not 200, but 200,000. And initially, our IT specialist and I, Sister LaDonna Muhammad, we were wondering if this was an error or if they had the commas in the wrong place, because we knew the show was growing, and we were hovering around 5,000 listens a week, and we said, well, we could accept 7,000, even 20, but 200. So I contacted Blog Talk Radio, and they said, no, that's accurate. And they said, your show was selected that week to be featured on our homepage, on Blog Talk Radio's homepage. That's that show page. Those of you that log in via Internet, when you log in, you'll see on the right side of the screen, continually rolling, you'll see featured shows. And Elevated Places was one of those programs.
Oh.
And so that exposed the program to a much broader audience. And so I was very humbled and delighted because, as Dr. Salam is saying, we're attempting through this program to create a forum for intelligent discussion and righteous discussion. There's so much filth and low-life, meaningless conversation going on around the world, but in America in particular. And black people are the number one consumers and users of, number one, smartphones.
Mm.
Number two, we're on Facebook more than anybody. And number three, we're on Twitter more than anybody. And number four, we text more than anybody. And so the minister is now calling on us not to abandon smartphones, texting, Twitter, Facebook, but to elevate the conversation.
That's right.
You know, start spreading the word among your followers that the time and what must be done is being preached. And direct them to NOI.org to listen to the message that no other black leader is giving. And I'm going back to Brother Scott's superior point of history, that Tuskegee is a place where there's an energy there that attracts the premier black leader of the time.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's a spiritual energy at that particular spot in Alabama, you know, where we have a deep history and a lot of blood was shed. You know, my father's family, his parents were part of that migration of black people who left the South to escape Jim Crow. But we suffered greatly in a state that the natural beauty of Alabama is profound. It's a beautiful place. But it's hard to discern the beauty of the South when you're there, because all you think of as a black person is suffering. You know, you can't escape it. And it persists. It's a certain type of acute racism that persists there. But I don't mean to go on and on, but with 200,000 listens, we are now more poised to not only continue to fight back against low-life thinking, but to provide yet another outlet for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
That's right.
And we have, I lost the call letters. I'm going to ask Sister LaDonna to put them up for me again on the screen so I can share with you all. But Elevated Places has been picked up by a radio station in Iowa, which beginning, and the program is Torchlight with 100,000 listeners. Brother Michael is the host of that show, Torchlight, but also that station. And they will be streaming Elevated Places on Thursday evenings live, beginning next Thursday.
Wow,
and it's, she just posted it for me, WKBOL 100.1, I think is at 101.1 FM, WKBOL 101.1 FM in Iowa. And I'm sorry, Sister LaDonna, I also forgot which city. And I'll get that before we go off the air. Oh, 100.1 FM, WKBOL. And you can also get that over the internet by going to WKBOL.com. So things are happening.
That's right.
Yeah, because of this incredible, extraordinary motion of one black man. You know, I'm so glad you all and Dr. Salam are talking about, and Brother Scott, the movement of the minister, you know,
right.
and the speed and alacrity with which he is doing things, and all of us have got to begin to do the same. You know, he has told us once, he said, it takes us, meaning black people, it takes us too long to do everything. You know, and
right.
If we look at, here's a man that Brother Scott said, every request made of him for his time, he granted it. He doesn't have downtime. And he doesn't look good for an 80-year-old man. He looks good for a person, a human being. You know, as you called him, Dr. Ridgely, the next human being.
That's right.
You know, he doesn't just, he, it's not like, oh, he looks good for an old man. He just looks good, period.
I told the minister one time, I said, you know, I was in dinner with him. I said, brother minister, you know, I'm old man, you know, but you are a beautiful black man. He said, get that brother some more bean soup. You know, but his spirit is more even beautiful than his physical, if that can, if that's possible. But, you know, he's be 80 in May, but, you know, Moses didn't start, he didn't go talk to Pharaoh until he was 80. Moses really didn't get into his mission until he was 80. And I got the feeling, that's why I was feeling in Tuskegee, that Mr. Farrakhan is getting ready to get into his mission. So, well,
exactly.
Here he comes.
Woo. Exactly. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, we don't even, we begin to learn how to live at 70.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so obviously God did not intend for us to be checking out at 40, 50, 60, which is what
we're doing
because of the diet that we consume. Because as Dr. Ridgely keeps going off about, we don't feed ourselves. So no matter what else we do, until we start doing that, we're the loser.
That's right.
Long as the enemy controls what we eat, we are the loser. So Tuskegee, seminal fluid of the kingdom of God. Go ahead.
Let me ask, is Sister Brooke still on the line?
Let me see.
Okay, well.
I think we lost Brooke.
I was just going to say, you know, I know that everybody got to see the keynote address, but there were so many other engagements or platforms for engagement for Brother Farrakhan. And one of the ones that I would like to share with you and your audience is his visit to the home of Queen Mother Amelia Boynton Robinson, who is the mother of the voting rights movement. And if you ever look in history, you will see the picture of her being beat down by Sheriff Jim Clark. Oh, no, I think it was It was Sheriff Jim Clark on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And we showed that picture to the minister and to his security team. Many of the security team had never saw it. But when the minister walked through the door, he immediately rushed to her. And she's 107. And she's the alumni of Tuskegee. And she has a magnificent history. She actually started out, Sister Muhammad, in women's suffrage with her mother when she was 11 on a horse and buggy, you know, going south, getting women to vote, to register to vote. And it was her marriage to Mr. Sam Boynton and their work in Selma that preceded Dr. King's coming to Selma. They actually invited him to Selma to work, and they were already being tracked. And so, you know, when the minister came through the door, he immediately rushed over to the chair she was sitting at and kneeled down and kissed her face over and over again and hugged and embraced her and thanked her for the work that she had done to make all of our lives better. And we had a beautiful time at Mother Boynton Robinson's home. And there's a famous artist, brother named Ronnie McDowell, who is famous, you know, his portraits of the four little girls and other movement events. He painted a beautiful picture of Mother Robinson and the students that were crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge. I believe she was number 7 in that march. And on the other side, Brother Farrakhan and the Million Man March, and in between them, the Earth and the United States. You know, the Earth was inside of the country of America, And it was just, it was dynamic, and the minister really, really appreciated and loved that. Right after that, we went, we took them over. We had arranged for the mayor, the city council, the county commission, the judges. We had pastors from around the county there, and we had a luncheon, and the lunch was donated by a black grocer, Mr. Greg Calhoun, who has, I think, 7 stores throughout Alabama, I think Atlanta, a couple other places. But he provided the food, and the minister had a lunch, and he spoke and announced that he was launching the 3-year economic plan from Tuskegee. And I think that many people may not know that he said that, because that wasn't taped and put out. Another event
beautiful
that was very significant, and I am thankful for Sister Brooke, you know.
And she's back,
I'm back on
the phone,
just way. Just let you know, I'm back on the phone.
Okay, beautiful. That Friday morning, you know, we had arranged for the 300 high school students, which represents most of the high school students in rural Macon County, to be bussed over to the university for the minister to address them. And a lot of the reasoning behind that was because in these rural areas, after school, a lot of them, you know, can't get to an event. Parents don't have rides, et cetera, et cetera. But the ADL wrote some vicious mess and pressured the school district and the university, you know. And so first it went that they had to have permission slips, so it dropped from 300 to 100. Then at the last minute, they pulled a move and said, well, only the children whose parents take them. Your parents have to take you. So we wound up with just about 10, I think. Was it about 10, Brooke?
It was about 10 to 15. Yeah, 10 to 15 of them in there.
Yeah, but Sister Brooke had organized the non-traditional leaders on the campus, the non-traditional college students. And so we had a nice, intimate setting, and we had a moderately full house. You know, it wasn't like it would have been, of course, but we did have them. And I know Brooke was, you know, very upset, and, you know, I probably said some things from the mic that might give me a call, but the minister, when he came in, he told us, you know, don't worry about that.
That's right.
You know, all I need is one.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
One to go rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I mean, the interaction of that 80-year-old man,
mm-hmm,
with his high school 16, and I mean, had him rapt attention. And it
they
was
loved
beautiful.
Him. It was amazing.
Yeah, life-changing, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we had some really very fruitful things in between, going on in between, you know, the session that you saw. Dr. Ridgely, you know, we asked him to come out to this dinner. You know, we arranged for every dean of every college in Tuskegee, all of the deans of agriculture, animal husbandry, aeronautics, the engineering department, all of them were present at the president's home to receive Brother Farrakhan, and some of the most prominent scientists of the university were also invited. So on our end, we invited Dr. Ridgely to represent the nation, and we invited Dr. Larry, and then there were some others that we invited from around the country, you know, because, you know, it was just that kind of meeting. And Dr. Ridgely and I sat together with the minister and the president, and, man, when I say just a very profoundly powerful conversation, and watching how the minister handled, you know, the different personalities, you know, how he handled people's dignity, you know, when, you know, it was amazing. But the thing that he said in there, because when you saw these scientists and these deans, they were from all over the world, and the minister was able to speak into each one of their home place and tell them something, you know. And, you know, he said that the messenger told him that at a particular time that our people would come from around the world to teach us how to build a new reality, a new world for ourselves. I'm saying that we're ready. We're ready.
That's
right. It's like it ain't even no sense in doing a bunch of talking, you know, because we actually working. And it's
that's
good.
That's exactly right.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's why we have to break away from the I can't overemphasize the filth, the idiocy, the rebellion of this world, which you'll really hear him get into this coming Saturday. Babylon is fallen. Because whatever we do is going to be based on what we say, and what we say is going to be based on the way we think. In the beginning was the Word. And so until we come out of and bring our children out of the filth and indecency of this world, we're going to go down with it if we don't separate from it. And so the minister is moving urgently to enable us to feed ourselves. Alabama's greatest is access to waterways on the coast.
That's right.
Great place
That's
to
right.
start. The messenger
That's
said
right.
8 to 10 states. 8 to 10 states. You know, we built this whole country. We just want 20% of it. You know?
That's right. That's right.
You know, so it's on.
And I'd like to thank Brother Scott for the invitation to sit and watch that profound philosophical discussion between Minister Farrakhan and the president of the university. That one was deep. And it is all about how good can be twisted for bad, and that we have to look every gift horse into the mouth, especially when it comes to funds that they send to our black colleges, is what are they really after? So it was a very profound conversation to watch.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sister Brooke,
and
you know, we're down to about, we're less than 4 minutes, and we'd like to hear from you one more time, like a little summary of where are we right now? What's next at Tuskegee? And not only the university, but the city. What's next on your agenda?
You know, next on our agenda, like, I, you know, our theme for the year is youth and peace building. So for Black Belt, it's to really just get involved with the youth in the community because we're over 50% under 25, the age range under 25.
Wow.
And there's no recreational activities to do in Tuskegee. There's no funds even allotted towards that in Tuskegee. So that's our job, is to hit the streets, hit the communities, and show them that, you know, we're not just a bunch of college students who don't care about the community. We're here, we're staying, and we're not going to be plucked away by some company, because this is where our heart is, this is where our nutrients are, this is where our roots are. So we're staying in Tuskegee. And
cool.
I think the city, I think,
well, pray you too long.
I think the city, we just have to work on a collaborative effort. I mean, just more collaborations. As politics works and as small town politics works, sometimes people's personalities can overshadow what's the bigger picture. So I think as a community, we're just going to have to work towards getting over that and realizing that, you know, everybody can't be the forefront person. It's okay to stand back and do some of that background work. It doesn't make you any less of a person. It actually kind of shows your leadership qualities. So that's where Tuskegee as a city and as an organization, we're going to be headed towards.
You are one powerful young black woman, and we thank Allah for you over and over. And for you, Brother Scott, and for you, Dr. Ridgely, and for you, Brother Terrence, Sister Rona Muhammad, Brother Bobby Muhammad, and Sister LaDonna Muhammad, the Elevated Place team, who make this show possible every week. It's like a dream come true for me to hear all this intelligence and wisdom and brilliance come together every week. And tonight has just been phenomenal. I mean, we're just, unlike the poor Miami Heat, we still have a perfect record. So we are going to continue on. I mean, you know, I'm Chicago now, so what can I tell you? But... you wasn't gonna bring that up here.
even though
we had to go gangster on him, and you know, LeBron, who I adore, but you know, he was crying about getting beat up. But
we're closing out the
out the show.
Closing out the show. So remember, Elevated Places will be back next Thursday. Callers, come on so you can get exposed to the Iowa audience. You might get discovered. We're going to be streaming live. I will be in Cleveland at Mosque Number 18 this Sunday. And so may Allah bless all of us.
Thank you for listening to and participating in Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Be sure to join us right here every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. If you enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.